Well, good morning. Welcome back. One of the highlights of the week is sitting down with our independent bookseller of the week to discuss some great reads that they want to share with Roundtable listeners. It's a thrill to talk about all of these incredible books. Lily Bartels is a book buyer for the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery. She is here to tell us about these winner titles that have come out or will be coming out shortly. Lily, good morning. Always a pleasure.
Nice to see you, Joe, and welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back, and I thank you so much for being here this morning and for collecting such a great list. Where would you like to begin?
I'm going to start with Spirit Run, which is a fantastic debut memoir by a young man named Noe Alvarez. He is the son of undocumented Mexican immigrants who came to the U.S., as so many millions have, to try to give their son a better life. And he went to work alongside them in a fruit packing plant in Washington State while living in a sort of downtrodden, dead-end neighborhood, with his parents always urging him to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And he did win a scholarship to college. But he was unhappy there. He felt out of place as the only Latino American student. And so eventually he left school and he traveled to British Columbia to participate in what's called the Peace and Dignity Journeys, which are non-competitive marathons for indigenous peoples. So with a group of about a dozen other Native American and First Nations runners, Alvarez embarked on this 6,000-mile trek from Alaska to Guatemala. And it was a four-month trek. It was grueling. They encountered many challenges, both natural and man-made. So, for instance, encounters with mountain lions, but also having rocks thrown at them by motorcycle gangs. Nevertheless, they continued onward and in the end of the story, which really, you know, it really tested Noe Alvarez to his core. But what he discovered as they ran through these lands that were largely stolen from their native ancestors, in the end, he comes to feel that he has found new connections to this American land, and not only to the land, but to a revived hope that he will have a brighter future. It's a great adventure read, but it also, he is an extremely wonderful writer, a great new voice on the scene, and it gives a lot of insight into not only the Native American experience, but to the experience of immigration itself. He's very, very insightful.
Spirit Run is the name of the book, a 6,000-mile marathon through North America's stolen land. Noe Alvarez is the author. Next up.
Let's talk about We Ride Upon Styx by Quan Berry. Pure delight. Pure delight, very original, unique story. It's set in the town of Danvers, Massachusetts, which at one time was Salem Village, where the accusations of witchcraft that led to the Salem witch trials actually arose. It's set in the 1980s, the late 80s, and it follows the girls' field hockey team at Danvers High School are having a terrible season, and they are willing to do anything to make it to the state finals, even if that might include engaging some dark powers, shall we say.
All
and
right.
The way they do this is they sign a dark pledge in a spiral notebook on whose cover is a picture of Emilio Estevez. And let me just say that this story is very firmly grounded in 80s pop culture and iconography. And so you've got that 80s nostalgia thing going on. But at any rate, after they sign the pledge, they start to win. And they start to have a really fantastic season.
So does Emilio Estevez play the devil in this? Is that sort of the connotation?
Unclear.
Okay.
But in their minds, he begins to demand more and more things of them.
All right. Very demanding.
demanding
one
Emilio.
One of the Sheen boys. Yes, go ahead.
So the author, Quan Berry, she takes an unusual approach in telling the story because she tells it from the first person plural, like the we voice. And yet each girl tells a part of the story. And she weaves together these individual stories, and we get to know each girl really intimately as they each bump up against what were the gender norms of the time and the kind of stultifying expectations of femininity, and also grapple with other issues like race, because several of these young women are people of color, and issues of identity, issues with their families. But ultimately, what happens is they actually do begin to awaken to their own powers as individuals and as a team, and they discover their true selves, and that the real magic comes from, it's inherent in their friendship and in their solidarity. And I found this book to be just, as I said, it's a delightful read. It's touching. It's frequently hilariously funny. And it has a truly emotionally satisfying ending. And I just want to say, can't we all use that right now?
Absolutely. It's We Ride Upon Sticks by Quan Berry. All right, next.
Nonfiction, A Game of Birds and Wolves by Simon Parkin. Vividly told story about an unsung group of women who belonged to Britain's Women's Royal Naval Service, or WRENS, as they were called, and also a little-known aspect of World War II. So it follows this group of 10 WRENS who were enlisted to help create a strategy to defeat the Nazi U-boats, which were threatening England's sea lanes, which, of course, were vital to their commerce and sustaining them as they tried to defend against Germany. So they were assigned to work on understanding Germany's tactics through a grand strategy game that was literally played out on a linoleum floor, divided into painted squares, using model ships to be moved across a make-believe ocean. And in this way, they were able to develop what was called Operation Raspberry, which was a counter-maneuver that helped turn the tide of the war. And not incidentally, they also picked up U-boat radio signals, which they then sent on to the codebreakers at Bletchley Park, where other WRENS deciphered them. So I want to say, without sounding too cheesy, that this is another story of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And the author, Simon Parkin, brings a lot of heart to the human side of the story. It's very novelistic in its approach. And these people become larger than life to us. And I have to just say that I was looking at the back of the book yesterday where all the other author blurbs are for the book. And one of them said something like, read this book now before Hollywood gets a hold of it and it's ruined. I'm pretty sure that remark must have been made before Spielberg picked it up for DreamWorks.
Probably.
Because, you know, the guy's got a fairly good track record. So yep. I'm looking forward to that one.
Secret Board Game Helped Win World War II. Let's try it again. A Game of Birds and Wolves, The Indigenous Young Woman.
No.
Try it for a third time. A Game of Birds and Wolves, The Indigenous Young Women, Whose Secret Board Game Helped Win World War II. Get it right?
I think the indigenous part might be off, but that's okay. We get the idea, Jeff.
Ingenious. There you go.
All right, let's move on with Enterprising Waters.
Can we just call it A Game of Birds and Wolves?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's your
and
show,
it's by, Joe. It's by Simon Parkin. Thank you.
Enterprising Waters, The History and Art of New York's Erie Canal. And the main author of this is Brad L. Utter, who is the senior historian at the New York State Museum right here in Albany. It's a big, lavishly illustrated volume that ties into a current exhibit there, which is commemorating the bicentennial of the beginning of the construction of the Erie Canal. And I believe that exhibit runs into October, so see it if you can. This is really its companion catalog, and it tells the canal's story from its inception to the present. And it's an amazingly rich history. First of all, the Erie Canal was one of the largest public works ever undertaken in America. And it profoundly directed the course not only of our state history, but our larger U.S. history, because, of course, it opened up the West to trade and settlement. Towns sprang up along its path. Millions of people poured into New York. So, you know, it really reminds us of the incredible role that the Erie Canal played in our country's history. So the book includes reproductions of all of the objects and artifacts and photos and images and works of art that are included in this exhibit, and then it's accompanied by text that sets it into the contemporaneous landscape of it, the politics of the time, the engineering of the canal, commerce along the canal. What was life like actually on the canal? It's a beautiful, fascinating book. And pick it up and thumb through it and you'll be instantly engrossed. And it, you know, it's two centuries of our history told in words and in images.
The name of the book: Enterprising Waters, The History and Art of New York's Erie Canal by Brad Utter.
Moving on to another novel that I really loved. It is a beautifully told story that's based on an actual incident that occurred in 2010. And that's called Dear Edward by Anne Napolitano. And the Edward of the title is a 12-year-old boy who's the only survivor of a devastating plane crash that kills everyone else on board, including Edward's family, his parents, and his brother. And the story follows Edward's life in the subsequent 6 years after he is taken in to be raised by his aunt and uncle, and how he acclimates to an entirely different life, and how he grapples with incredible loss and the psychological and physical trauma that he sustains as a result of what happened. And it also finds him having to confront, you know, this celebrity-like status that's conferred upon him by virtue of his incredible survival. Most important, though, that the story follows his friendship with the 12-year-old neighbor girl named Shay, who it talks about how that friendship begins, how it develops, how Shay really becomes Edward's lifeline, really to life itself. There are two storylines here, though, because in alternating chapters, we get a look at the flight itself from its takeoff in New York to where it goes down about three quarters of the way on its journey to California. And what Napolitano does is she chooses individuals on that plane and tells their backstories and also their interactions on the plane. So in that way, even though we know that the flight is doomed, it sustains, we already know the outcome, but there's a certain momentum and tension that's sustained throughout the narrative, even as we are learning about what happens to Edward in the ensuing years. It's a very tenderly told, very compassionately told story. I love this book, and I'm foisting it upon customers who come into our store.
So be careful.
And you too, Joe. So,
Dear Edward, a novel by Anne Napolitano. All right, finally,
let's end with The Splendid and the Vile, a new nonfiction work by the very popular writer Eric Larson, who's probably best known for his best-selling The Devil in the White City, which chronicled a serial killer at loose at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. Here he takes on the subject of Winston Churchill and explores how did he inspire the British people to be relatively fearless in the face of such tremendous threat and deprivation and destruction. Again, Larson is another writer whose story has a very novelistic feel to it, but it's firmly grounded in his research from diaries, archival documents, and secret intelligence that has, you know, since been declassified. And it fleshes out the narrative that is unique in telling about the public Churchill, but also the private Churchill running on parallel paths. So while we see the political Churchill, you know, creating this tremendous act of leadership to get his people through the war, we also see what's going on the home front domestically, where there are also challenges to Churchill's domestic life and how he navigates that and how ultimately he held together both the country and his family. So it's a day-to-day look at London's darkest year. And the overarching picture is one of what true leadership looks like.
It's an amazing book. We just had Eric on the book show last week, which is still available. It's an amazing interview, and he's just an amazing writer. The book, The Splendid and the Vile, a saga of Churchill, family, and defiance during the Blitz. For anything else you want to mention in 15 seconds?
Well, you refer to these as late winter releases. I prefer to think of them for my own mental health as early spring releases, Joe.
Okay. All right. That's fine. however you wish to categorize them is fine with me. Opendoor-bookstore.com for more information. Visit them on J Street in Schenectady. Lily Bartels, thank you very much. Always good to see you.
You too, Joe.
Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.